Let's see how this behaves. Well, it's just recording, so it's not really skipping silence because there isn't any. There's a lot of birds around. I'm back at the Metropolitan Park of Santiago, and this is toward the end of my trip. I was here on my second day of this trip because we were waiting for electrical problems to get worked out, and there was nothing to do until that got resolved. So now that's resolved. The equipment is working fine in place. There's some time here before anything happens. I'm not really needed, and so here I am doing I'm going to try to see some places that I didn't see before, and climb some trails. So this is not a nice park. When I first came here on day two, I can see the little gondola cars overhead, and they go to a couple of sites, and there's a I don't know if it's a monastery, I don't know what it was really called, a retreat. Anyway, you go up there and there's some so I went and did that, sent Lisa a lot of pictures. I'll probably make some blog posts about that after this trip is done, when it's like, when it ceases to be interesting anymore. Anyway, I'm amazed by the engineering involved in these gondola car situations. I find that technology, and it's quite old actually, it's a mechanical thing, which we don't usually think of as technology anymore. Fascinating. Anyway, so I'm going to go ahead and start the walk. And you can be with me. I'm using the smallest, the most compressed stuff, so probably too bad of a thing to go for a few hours. Okay. These are places I've been to before, so I'm going to look for, and I'm going to go ahead and go back up again. This trail goes up to the Japanese garden. That's just a convenient way to get somewhere, I think. Santiago is probably a pretty typical metropolitan city. A lot of people around, a lot of people working, trying to get from here to there. I was among them for the middle part of my trip here. I'm kind of climbing up right now. There's a lot of noisy kids. I don't know if that's a feature of the modern age or just where they are. I don't know. I've been walking a lot. I want to avoid the traffic as much as I can, so I've been walking between operational sites here for the activity I'm supporting, and so this is a steep little trail. But I think I'm going to stay on the less steep part. This looks more like more walking. From the vantage point of that now, I can see quite a bit of Santiago. I see how smoggy it is, but there's an interesting story about it. Everything started to get far more interesting on Sunday. Work kind of ramped up. So I was at the Santiago site, which is some kilometers from my hotel. So I made the walk over. I had already looked at where the nearest LDS chapel was from my hotel. But the timing was bad and it didn't work together very well. I ultimately just went on to the next work site. And when things kind of sounded like we'd put together as much, or at least I had put together as much as I could, and the next little batch of potential work wasn't going to happen for another 4 hours, so I looked around for a church close by that place and found one and took the time to go. I was hoping to get the sacrament, but I arrived, alas, too late. There's only two wards meeting at that building. I caught the last ward right in the middle of the fast and testimony meeting. Listen to some people, stuff like that. After it was done, you know, people are curious about the person they don't recognize, and it's not dressed in the traditional white shirt and tie kind of situation. So they were having fun trying out their limited English on me, and me, my far more limited Spanish. And one of the sisters asked, "What did I think of Santiago?" And I said, "Smoggy." And she said, I don't know that." And I said, "Dirty air." And she didn't. I'm sure that didn't compute with somebody who might have lived the majority of their life here. This is simply the way the world is. I don't know. But she didn't keep going on with that conversation. Somebody else showed up, and talk went another way. So, but yeah, you can definitely see that. Oh, for church, I stayed through Sunday school as well, and was somewhat interested to see that Sunday school is conducted in this ward in Santiago, as it has traditionally been done for many decades. The rest of the world, it was not done as a discussion. Very much the old-fashioned gospel doctrine, smart scriptorian teacher up front, leading people through scriptures. I couldn't tell exactly what he was saying. He did mention Christ and the Spirit a lot. What was interesting is in this situation, we were the readings in "Come Follow Me" are from the Doctrine and Covenants, and this was a lot of revelations from Ohio. And so they would say, and I said, "What does this mean?" And he says, "To be honest, I've never been to Ohio either. Lisa wants to go on a Mormon history trip soon so that we can see these places. I've heard it's more meaningful, maybe, for some people, to be able to equate names and events to places that they've actually been to, that they've actually seen." So, that's good. Of course, everybody was giving me garbage because they said, "Well, you're from the United States." I go, "Well, whole different part." And I've never been to Ohio. And they're just flabbergasted by this. You know, they have a pretty good excuse for never having gone to Ohio. But I don't. It's part of my country. And you go, "My country's huge." And you go, "It's on the other end of it." It's like telling a Chilean how strange it is that they haven't been to Punta Arenas, which is at the very southern end of Chile. Chile is very long and stretched out. Although, at its entire length, it's not as wide as the United States is, strangely enough. So, I'm sure they'd say, "Well, I don't know, I've never been there." And you go, "Well, you're from Chile, don't you? Don't you travel around? Don't you see your country?" It's like, I guess they don't. Anyway, so, I'm up I'm up the tough hike. I did not take it in any kind of speed or style. I am simply here. Oh. Anyway, it was interesting to hear about Ohio when you're 4,000 or 5,000 miles away from it. And you know, I said, oh, United States, that's where the church was born. You know, my part of the United States wasn't even part of the United States when the church was organized. So it's a little rough to think of it that way. Anyway, it's just interesting what kind of perspective different people have about different things. It says, probably the predominantly nice part is that the restoration of the gospel took place in a language that I'm native to. You know, that, I think that's probably the only meaningful part of it. I'm not from sites in church history, you know. It's like, I'm sure everybody thinks everybody in the United States that's what I already say is from Utah. And you go, I'm not. Anyway, I'm going to sit for a minute. Oy. Oh. So yeah, we checked Santiago. I think the fellow who is the bishop came up and shook my hand and said hello, welcome. It's like, thank you. And very gracias. Many people said, so are you moving in? They were all excited about that possibility. And it's like, no, I'm just here. I'm just here for not even 2 weeks. For work. And of course, they were wondering what kind of work I was doing. Mining must be a thing because that was what they all kind of presupposed was, oh, I must be here for mining. And I said, no. I tried to, I don't know if it's simplification or if it's just trying to put things off, but I said, I'm a contractor supporting the Chilean Air Force, which is vaguely true. Although I was here with the American Air Force. There's no point bringing that up particularly. Anyway, so that was the church experience. But yeah, that was the whole thing about smog. It's pretty smoggy today. You can see a little bit of the mountains. They're snow-capped. They were snow-capped a little more earlier. Anyway, so this park is kind of in the middle of Santiago. There's this big, I guess you call it a hill, but, you know, a very short mountain in the middle of town, and, you know, it doesn't lend itself much to development, so they turned it into a park. Although it's a very developed park, I think. A lot of, you know, like I said, there's gondolas going up to the very top. On the second level of this gondola, there is a pool, and I don't comprehend the pool. It's all green and disgusting now, so I don't know if they try to clean it up. during the season. It's the first part of June, and that is the, I think we're starting fall here. Just as much as in North America, we're ending spring and coming into the summer months, these guys are in the midst of fall going into their winter. So I'm gonna have two falls this year. Never a problem because fall is one of my favorite time of year. I like, probably because after a long, hot, obnoxious summer, I really enjoy the coolness of fall. Spring's probably next. I don't have really a preference between winter and summer. I don't know. You have to ask me most times how I feel about it. I think Lisa enjoys summer more because air conditioning, well, not air conditioning, a swamp cooler, evaporative cooling works for her. She likes that. I don't know how she feels about winter. She's very sensitive to cold, so I don't think she likes winter much. The putting in of a gas fireplace in this house that we have is in the cottage is all winter long. She tells me it was the most wonderful thing I ever did for her. And you go, was this money for me? I bought it and it is set in a box. I'm trying to remember if we actually bought it in Portales. I don't think we did. Way to go now. There's a road that goes further up, but I don't know how I feel about it. I think technically you can ride and bike up here, so I'm going to take it. I like getting off the beaten path a little. I don't like crowds. I'm an appreciator of solitude. And when you do some, how good of a researcher it really is, the kind of personalities there are. I stumbled onto this guy who's all about INFP. He's an INFP too. And they tend to be people that will probably do a lot of research about things. All of this could be defined as a road. I think it gives every impression of being a walking trail. So I'll treat it that way. And he's all about being successful and stuff like that. As an INFP, which is mostly, well, who's trying to spin it that these things were compatible with an INFP sort of personality, but to be honest, it was mostly about how to overcome INFP tendencies. And it sounded like just your typical motivational speaker talking to practically anybody, not really the INFPs particularly. Oh, we're about ready to go over the pass. There's the part of town that I'll be able to see. Here, up here. Santiago is huge. I think there's 8 million people here. I think most of the small apartment high-rises house as much people as live in all of Chukunchay and the surrounding area. But of course that's probably true of the larger cruise ships. Is that kind of a situation. I'm still looking at the tallest building in town, which I am, which my hotel is like maybe 2 blocks away from this tall building, which is shining at me. It hurts my eyes, so I don't look at it much. And I need to check in a little with work, see if there's anything to... Come on. Hello? Oh, jeez. Okay. Thank you. Normal unit chatter. And nothing else. Good. Okay. My work is predominantly, like I said, my work is predominantly done here. We're going to have to, I don't know exactly how this trip is going to end up being justified. In the future, I will not be instigating the travel. I have discovered yet again, or I don't know if it's yet again, but I've discovered that I don't care to travel particularly. If I need to, I will. That's okay. If it's part of the job, I understand. But I'm not going to do what's needed. I guess I've crossed some wonderful barrier here. I'm south of the equator now, which is supposed to be this amazing thing. Back in the days when I worked for PGS doing oil exploration, you know, the more experienced guys who had been several places told stories of, you know, the old naval traditions of what they would do to you as you went across the equator as a kind of a hazing. And of course I'm not a fan of hazing. So another part of the personality type. Anyway. So I have definitely crossed the equator. I'm definitely in the southern hemisphere. I'm in South America. Santiago, Chile is pretty... I think it might be the southernmost capital in South America. There's only 2 countries this far south, Chile and Argentina, and I'm reasonably sure, or I can look in the map and find out for sure, that Buenos Aires, which is the capital of Argentina, is further north than Santiago is. Or if not, they're about the same latitude. Anyway. But yeah, When people can ask these questions, I can tell them of my experiences. Very few, because, you know, it's just for a very short time. And it's mostly work, and this isn't, I don't try not to talk about work. And, anyway, so, if you have a bucket list, I really don't. This is one of the things you can say. For being a guy that derives little pleasure from such accomplishments, I've accomplished a bit. You know, I don't mind telling people, yeah, I've been to Africa. I took an ocean voyage from Key West, Florida to Lomé, Togo, which is across the Atlantic. Like I said, we got really close to the equator, but we didn't cross it on that ocean voyage, because Lomé Togo is still north of the equator, barely, but it still is. Anyway, I'm not trying to get to all the continents. I'm not trying to see a lot of countries. Although if the opportunity comes up, why not? But I'm a simple person. I finally did travel as a tourist once to Scotland and Ireland with Lisa. I can't believe she said she wanted to do it. It was on a Sunday. One Sunday we were sitting there, and I forget what circumstance we were in. I think I was still working for New Mexico Tech. Maybe it was even before that. Because I seem to recall saying to, when I took jobs, that I had this big vacation coming up, our 35th anniversary, and that I needed to make sure that that wasn't a problem, that I would be able to do it. And how it ultimately did was, we actually did that trip between jobs. I had already been offered the job at Pantex in Amarillo. So so Lisa wasn't stressed out that we had no work. But I said I couldn't start until such and such a date, which they were fine with them. And it was like, okay, so I'm going to go on a vacation. We had saved up plenty of money to do this trip. And we did it, and that was great. I liked that it was between jobs so that I didn't have to fret or take a work phone with me to say, you know, I'm keep checking in, make sure everything's okay. Constantly be bothered by work. So it made for a nice trip that way. So I wasn't constantly just distracted by work. And we got to see places from, to be honest, our ancestry. Both Lisa and I have backgrounds from Scotland and Ireland. Certainly not exclusively. Hers is more French, and mine's more English, except for my interesting male line ancestry back to Aaron, which is the only thing I have from that particular ancestry for quite a while. Anyway, so yeah. So here I am in a distant land for work in the old days. The funny thing is if I would have stayed at PGS any longer, our boat was getting ready to be moved to, I think there was work to do off of the coast of Australia, and that our boat would be making that transit. And I probably would have been on the boat for part of that, if it was possible at all. Chances are they wouldn't have had any of the clients on there except for just the skeleton crew to just make sure the equipment was okay. Or they probably would have stripped all the equipment off the boat, sent the boat over there, because you usually have to re-equip the boat for each individual survey. So, it really didn't matter one way or the other. Anyway. Wow. These are amazingly tall buildings. There's a lot going on here. I only know about Punta Arenas because one of the air crews that I worked with was going to ultimately go down there and do some do some flying in that circumstance so that their pilots could have that experience. And so that's really way down by like Tierra del Fuego area, the Straits of Magellan, that kind of business. Anyway, I think this was kind of the exercise to kind of show off to the Chilean Air Force what the American Air Force is capable of, what it can do. I think we use it as a larger selling tactic to remain friends with us, not that that's really particularly threatened. Everybody thinks that Donald Trump is destroying our reputation in the world, and to a large extent, I don't think that's true at all. I think they all say, hey, what do you think of Trump? And it's like, to be honest, I don't know. He hasn't really been in office very long. Although I have high hopes. However, a little warning sign coming up. Every park has to have interpretive signage everywhere. These are mostly on telephone poles. This park is usually pretty good for having things in both Spanish and English. But not lately. So I'm right here. I don't know where I came into this, but it looks like I've either started my trip or I am near the end of it. I think I've kind of started it. So I've got quite a ways to go. Or at least, I don't know. The distances look a little weird. About a kilometer from the bathrooms at the Japanese thing. And I don't know. Anyway, okay. I'm going to continue going the way I am. I'm looking down on a gas station. I'm right next to a 1, 2, 3, 4. It's really hard to see things here. Nothing's very straightforward. Looking down on a six-lane highway. Tollway, I see the toll booths open. Oh, something that I try to avoid if I can. Anyway, so I'm not going to talk about why we're here. The point is, I'm here. and I'm for the experience, I guess. So if the job says, well, you guys probably aren't going to travel as much, it's not going to break my heart. I like being with Lisa, if I want to be honest. I do. Yeah. When I was younger, I think I was more adventurous. And I don't know. To a certain extent, Lisa and I may have been growing apart when we were younger. Maybe a little. I don't know. You could ask Lisa that question. Probably get something more useful than what I can give you. I'm glad now that we're not. I don't think we are growing apart at all now. I talk to Lisa at least twice a day while I'm traveling. And we're getting older now. Of course, Lisa's 6 years older than I am, so she's a little further down the road. Various things are starting to fall apart. Her knees are having troubles. She's gotten into these really, I would consider them to be really extremely restrictive diets. To try and handle knee inflammation, and to be honest, I think those diets have really stolen most of her joy away for pain. So I'm glad that we found that if we give her these enzyme capsules. She doesn't use them much at all, just occasionally. She can eat a wider range of food. Today she tells everybody that she can't handle gluten and she can't handle dairy. She says, let me tell you, gluten, as far as I'm aware of, is the wellspring of joy. If you avoid it, you're going to live a very sad existence. So, to be honest, I think we really look forward to the future. Lisa's got a lot more nerve endings, I think, than most people. Evidenced by the fact that anytime anybody tries to give her some kind of anesthetic, it rarely works very long, or as long as it needs to. And she's a lot more than anybody's supposed to have. And doctors give her all kinds of crap about, this should not hurt. And she's just flinching and she's moaning because she's in pain. And they're like, well, I've already given you the maximum amount I can give to a person because of what you told me about you. And you go, yeah, as well, didn't get that. So Lisa has to endure a lot of pain. And it's because of how sensitive she is. And you know what? I really look forward to the time when she might. Everybody talks about how horrible it is to be separated from your body. I guess that's in scripture. I said, I think, to some extent, Lisa will actually be really glad to be rid of this stuff, save her from some of that garbage. I'm going to take, there's a kind of a cutout here. I'm going to take a little bit of a picture. Oh, there's a trail that goes down here, but it's nowhere near where I want to be. Okay, let's take a picture. Oh, the glare is really bad. take some pictures. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. Alright, I don't know if it paused during that time or not. Okay, so this is like a little nature island in the middle of, oh my gosh, I'm stuck in the middle of New York City or something. And it's not by Central Park, at least from what I know of Central Park, which is nothing, I've never been there. But yeah. As far as I know, Chile is probably one of the last of European conquests. And so I think Santiago and Chile themselves are really quite young European places. And you go, but they're not in Europe. And you go, yeah, but when they stopped being native dominated territories, that was. That's what that really is about. So, I would have to say that this is probably the product of the early 1800s, was when this part of the world came under colonization to a larger extent. The more northerly parts of South America were more settled. This was always kind of the outskirts. The further south you go, the more like the outskirts it really ended up being. Oh. This gives every intention of being the end of this road. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, not completely. It's not completely barred off. But I don't think I need to be here. Yeah. I don't know what this was. Vivero. Anyway. The thunder. I think I'm going to go ahead and just go back the way I came.
Alright.
Okay. Since I'm not going any place in particular, it doesn't really matter. Better than just hanging out in a hotel room waiting for something tricky to happen. The next possible thing coming up would be around 2 in the afternoon here. It's now 11 o'clock, so I've got 3 hours where nothing is going to be happening. I checked my phone anyway a few times just to make sure that nobody's trying to contact me. This is the time I need to be available for work. Even if I'm not working. Anyway, so At least one gets this impression. I'll have to go back and do some research on Chile just to make sure that I'm not totally off base. I'm saying the conquistadors came through this area, but this is really far from Spain, and Chile's on the wrong side of everything. It's on the west side of the Andes Mountains. I think its basic trade is with Asia. Just because of its proximity to the Pacific Ocean. But time has passed. This is a modern city. I tell you, to be honest, a little too modern for me. I'm really happy, quite happy not to be anything but just working here temporarily. So there's that. Well, okay, so there was the INFP guy. Who decided that he was going to turn this into being a life coach, career counseling sort of fella. Well, there's a bit of a road up there. I wonder where that road goes. I wonder. I'm going to go up here. There's no sense skipping other adventures. Some bikes have gone up this way, but not many. But I can see signs that there's a trail up here at least, if not a road. So I'm climbing up. So yeah, everybody has to find some niche to make money, to do something. Not a bad thing. But I think it's interesting when it's like, oh, INFPs. And you go, I think all the fellow basically looked at it as, at the end of the day, was two or three nice, two or three nice attributes. And a whole bunch of things to overcome. Mostly saying, hey, you need to stop being introverted. maybe get yourself a success path, which is the normal success path. Going out and networking like mad, which, can I be honest, I don't know how well that works anymore. Another construction site. Jeez. Put it up a little higher. Find it interesting the Hume Myers-Briggs type indicator. A little bit of scat. Oh, it's a weird feeling. I'm coming up on some private land. May have to go down anyway. There's a, it's like a fire watch lookout. Up here. Old mobile home. And a big, I don't know if it's a sewer line or a water line, here next to me. I'm kind of tending toward, it's awfully big for a water line. I'm kind of tending toward sewer. It's a pretty primitive track up here. I think that this is an orchard or not. Anyway. Anyway. So yeah. All this stuff is kind of just used by marketing companies to, take off my jacket. Oh. Used by marketing companies to feed off your insecurities and justify therapy or life coaching, which is kind of what therapy, I think, has kind of become. I feel kind of stiff, although I've been watching. This is a day. It really hasn't been. I got here. Whoa. Tuesday morning? Wednesday morning after I got here. And so, it's only, what day is it now? It's Thursday. Oh, I've been here a week. Okay. There's that. Getting off the beaten path too far. Not good to try to do vaguely illegal, vaguely legal, exploring in a foreign country, you know? I think that distracts from getting home, which I really want to do, because I love Lisa. I don't want to be gone any longer than I have to. And that's what the way travel's become. Like I said, I'll do it as it's part of the job at the moment. But if they say, we really don't want you to go, then I'm not really going to press the point of wanting to go anymore, which I think is what I did on this particular trip. I think I kind of talked people into letting me do it. Now, I'm not going to say that I didn't say, oh, man, I've never been to South America. I want to go. You know? But another requirement of, I think this trip is more than anything else, helped me try and be more grateful for where I am. I'm not often very complimentary of Tucumcari. Well, it's simply just a place. But people say, oh, Tucumcari is just so wonderful, and you go, okay, that's great. I don't think so. This is But I've always kind of looked for other places where I thought I might fit in better. I think I've come to the realization that I'm not going to fit in anywhere particularly. Except that I want to take good care of Lisa. I love her very much. She has more needs, more, I don't know, she has different needs than I do, for sure. But I've decided to devote more of my time to making sure she has as good a mortality as she can have. Now that is a tricky prospect because of nerve endings on top of nerve endings on top of nerve endings. She's really very tricky that way. She's often uncomfortable. I'm a guy that avoids doctors like the plague. I don't mind having them when I have something specific I want them to look at. I do not want to be under medical management. That's not interesting to me. Although, that's what most of the medical profession is about now. It's about you being under management. Some doctor, to a large extent, not owning you, but really kind of being... So you're supposed to go into their office on a regular basis. They check all your fluid levels. Oh, blah, 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 blah. They take huge batteries of very expensive tests. the smart ones say, oh yeah, there's this problem and this problem, we need to get you on this drug and that drug, and you need to be monitored even more regularly. At least they start catching on to it when somebody talked her into doing her regular mammogram and the normal tests didn't what's a good way to say it? Couldn't see everything. There was Lisa has a lot of I don't know how to describe it. Anyway, they couldn't see much. They sent her to a specialist, and they said, "Well, here's the thing, and we can't really see what the deal is with that. So you need to go see a specialist." Like she already had a problem, and she goes, she didn't even come in with a problem. And so they did it, but they scheduled her to go, you know, 160 miles away every 3 months to get her breasts checked. And you go, did you find anything wrong? And they go, no, but we want to keep an eye on it. And you're going, I'm not interested in you doing that at all. Period. But she went a few times until she just, I don't know if it was gumption, I don't know how she needed to get up the kind of fortitude maybe to basically tell somebody, I'm not coming back, and because you guys are just making, you know, and they say, well, it's not costing you anything. At the time we had health insurance. And, well, that was kind of true. We got into a Christian health care ministry instead because it costs less. Because you only use it when you really need it. You don't do these, you know, oh, I just went to the doctor because I do that every 6 months. And you go, was there a need to? And you go, not that I'm aware of. If we would have caught it 6 months ago, we could have done something about it. You know, it's kind of scare tactics almost. Anyway, so doctors always give you crap. Oh, you're a typical male. You don't care about anything. You know, your blood pressure's high, and you go, so what? Well, you got to bring that down. And you go, I don't care what you think. Well, we've got to put you, you know, if you can change your lifestyle enough to bring it down, fine. It says, but if after, I'll give you 3 months, and if you come back, we're putting you on a drug regimen. I'm going to give you these drugs, and I'm going to give you these drugs, and these drugs, and these drugs to counteract the bad things about the first drug, and you'll have to come see me every month or two so we can get all your humors rebalanced, which never tends to happen. Anyway, so I think Lisa's gotten to that point too. She's right now doing a dental thing. She had chipped one of her teeth, and she wanted to get it fixed before it created problems. And they went in, and they didn't even touch the chip tooth. They ignored that. You know, they did all the X-ray work, and they said, "Oh, hey, we need to." We need to replace some crowns. And you're going, excuse me, that's not what I'm here for. I'm not interested in that. And I feel bad because they couldn't, because Lisa, I don't want to say she's easily manipulated, but anyway, people are. Lisa's a very normal person, as opposed to me, who is not normal at all. And I just stay away from these people. So, anyway, she's been suffering and not being able to eat solid food because they're taking their sweet time getting a crown done to replace, I guess to replace another one. Anyway, so it's kind of hard. It's getting harder these days when you confront these kinds of situations that, quote, healthcare professionals are just greedy opportunists who gin up small things to base their practices on. I never had a strong urge to become a doctor or something like that. Because I think in the modern day, that's what you have to do. Is be just practically a huckster. Telling everybody that they're about 5 inches from death. I've done a few blog posts called Metamania and my few run-ins with hucksterism under the guise of medicine. I think that's mostly what it is. The drug companies market drugs, and your doctor is basically there to sell drugs to you. The ones that are the most successful do. Like I said, I'm trying hard not to say that these guys are just being like ambulance chaser lawyers, trying to make a lot of money off of bad things happening. Life's unfair. I'll make it more fair. It's not going to cost you anything, but we're going to sue other people and make them pay for it. I don't know. Anyway, so Lisa's in the middle of trying to do that. I think they said they finally got the new crown in. She has an appointment tomorrow to have it put in. So maybe by the time I get home, she'll be feeling better. With a new crown that she probably didn't even need. So, anyway. Oh, but I was into the story of my CPAP machine. Lisa was concerned that I would stop breathing at night. She would be so scared that I was dead. But then also I'd go, and I'd be okay. So that was the problem I was trying to solve, was this thing was happening. Well, so went to the doctor. The doctor put this stupid monitor on me. And sure enough, yeah, I would stop breathing. It's like, duh, I could have told you that. That's what we told you when we walked in. But they needed to have their own test by their own equipment to do this. The nurse wasn't cautious enough. And she said, yeah, we bought this monitor and we check them out to people. Because, let me tell you, sleep, it was a fad. It was a medical fad that everything bad in life was caused by sleep apnea. It's still there. There's still plenty of people that are doing it, but it kind of came through our territory and then it kind of went out. So, yeah. There's that whole thing. They said, oh, yeah, we think we've got it, but we need to make sure. And they go, there's this sleep center in Clovis, which was some way away. And you actually go there and you sleep overnight, wired up to all this stuff. I don't know what it's supposed to really tell anybody. All it told me was, yeah, you actually stop breathing at night. It's usually caused by your tongue falling back into your thorax and cutting off the air. Your body has a kickoff thing to kind of wake you up enough that the tongue gets back out of the way and you can get air again. You know, everybody says, oh, you're going to die one day of this stuff unless you let us do this. So, after they did all that, this was all mostly tests that were required by my health insurance to pay for the CPAP machine, which is basically a big mask and a machine that constantly forces air into your body. And so I did it. I forget how long I did it. I might have done it for about 6 months or so. Stupid thing. Could never really get a very good seal at all on it, which means it wouldn't work. And if it couldn't get a seal, it would buzz at you saying you don't have a good seal. And so I got very little sleep. And then I started getting a bill. And they said, well, your insurance only covers part of the cost of that CPAP machine and only for a few months. Now we're going to have to charge you. It was going to be like $60 or $70 a month for the rental of the CPAP machine. And I said, this is garbage. This is dumb. I did some research. I've been doing some research all through this thing. And there were things that you could do to make sure your tongue didn't fall back and block the airflow, which was basically the problem that Lisa and I identified that was the problem. That, and I'm sorry, I've got the 150-year-old rule, which is, if this wasn't a problem 150 years ago, if people couldn't detect this or couldn't do anything about it or just ignored it, and half of the population didn't die, then it's really not that important. Although, boy, don't tell a doctor that. He will get livid. He or she will get livid. Well, she tends to get more livid than he does. Anyway, so. So I took back the CPAP machine and said, thank you very much, I don't need this anymore. He said, are you sure? Remember all the warnings they gave you that if you don't do this, you could die. Yeah, I know, thank you. Which I found hilarious because the actual tech who was with me during a lot of these sleep tests, he was a smoker with emphysema, and he had been a truck driver before he became this sleep tech. And you're going, okay, well, all right. No, nothing against truck drivers. It's just, but yeah, this was kind of what this paramedical hucksterism lends itself to. Some kind of ad somewhere saying, are you tired of driving a truck? We can teach you how to be a sleep tech, probably in a quite an expensive 6-week course, I'm sure, but he was still paying back, I'm sure, to, and you're just going, I'm not even interested in this. So I went and got, I call it the tongue sucker. I haven't used it in a long time. I still bring it with me in case there's a problem. But Lisa really hasn't brought up the, you stop breathing during the night. She hasn't brought that up in a while. I don't know if having that tongue sucker on my tongue, which really does pull your tongue, it probably pulls the tip of your tongue out of your mouth. It looks like a baby pacifier, really. I don't know if it just trained it so that it would always tend to do that at night, and to the point to where I don't even have to wear the thing anymore on my tongue. I don't know, but we solved the problem that Lisa had, and that's always what I tell people when they go and they get involved with the medical people, is I said, don't go to a doctor until you have a problem, and keep them focused on the problem. Don't get sucked into the whole, well, I ran extra tests, and those extra tests found this, and we need to work on this. Because they'll totally ignore what you came in for in their excitement about finding this other thing. Now, you can say, well, they're doing it just to make money. And you go, no, I think they really do come at it with, I'm really going to help people. But they really find it fun and exciting to come up with something that may be happening that you wouldn't normally have seen without their test taking and their interventions. So, and you go, nice enough people, but you can't let them do what their training and their tendency is to do. You just can't let them do it. Because they'll probably take your insurance company to the cleaners, and when you really need your insurance to work, your insurance will go, there's a plan maximum, and you've already spent it all. So therefore, we're not going to cover this. Which is a thing that, another thing about this kind of stuff, is insurance companies are the absolute worst.
are coming up with great reasons why they aren't going to pay. They aren't going to pay for something that you really need. They're perfectly willing to pay for the for this little test and that little test. It doesn't cost a whole lot, and they've got a really nice deal for it. And they can come back and tell you, see how wonderful life insurance, how wonderful health insurance is, and how it's going to make your life so much better. You know, it's all kind of about sales tactics more than anything else. Thinking that you need to have this and then just don't have a choice. Of course, in the United States now, you don't have a choice for or against. You have to have medical insurance. Other kind of kickbacks people get and stuff like that. It really is more of a business than anything else. You think it's there to help you and you go, yeah, maybe. But it spends a lot more time trying to get rich. And you go, does that make them evil? I don't know. I don't know at what point, if you do something, if certain tactics are evil. I have no idea. And I don't want to get into that thing, but I'm certainly the guy that says, I want to go to the doctor when you can't deal with it any other way. Getting back to more several parts of the park, a lot more people. A lot of people use these parks. It's great. It's kind of tricky for getting away from things, but probably as much getting away from things as the residents of Santiago are willing to go. Anyway. Oh. Let me check on this real fast and see if anything else has come in for anything. Nope. I long for the day when I can just go out and do something and not really worry about how much time has passed. Oh. People being too concerned about my health. Jeez. That 150 year ago rule is probably one of the best life. If I were to ever be a life coach, that would be the first thing I would tell almost everybody. It says, if people didn't even know about this 150 years ago, or if there was nothing they could do about 150 years ago, it probably doesn't matter, because let me tell you, plenty of people 150 years ago lived to a good long age. Everybody always says, oh, you should love being a part of this modern age, because you know, it gives you such longevity. And so the first thing is, would you rather have a shorter, more fulfilled life than a longer life sitting in a doctor's office?
or eating like a rabbit, or doing this or doing that. That's why I get a little bit weird about people who talk about the word of wisdom, and I'm not very happy that the church has decided that living the word of wisdom is the great barrier to going to the temple. It's not a commandment. I'm not going to get punished for not doing it. But apparently, you aren't the kind of Latter-day Saint you need to be unless you're following it. And you go, wow, I bet I could shoot somebody and they would have less issues with that than if I picked up smoking, for instance. Not that I'm interested in it particularly. Anyway, so that's where it comes, my whole attitude about sleep apnea, which is ignore it. I cast Lisa every once in a while. Have I started doing that again? She goes, no. And she goes, oh, good. I'm glad. I don't want you to, you know, I'm much more interested in making sure Lisa's okay than anybody else. I'm always impressed by these joggers. I used to run, and these bikers. This place is full of joggers and bikers. And, and apply the 150-year rule to it. And the people run and bike 150 years ago. I don't think there even were bikes. Whatever you think about running for recreation or for health or for something like that, get yourself a copy of Back to the Future 3 where it was brought up. And the old cowboys were sitting there drinking and smoking and all the stuff that they used to do back then. And it wasn't run for fun. What kind of fun is that? And it was just left there because that really, there really is no other answer than that one right there. What is that all about? So, another aspect of the 150-year rule. You know, I ran a lot when I was young. I think I was mostly doing it for some kind of weird therapy. I don't know. I don't remember how I got into it, cross-country running, but I did it for a while. I think it was because I was doing something I saw a girl doing that I liked. And that was as close as I got to being kind of a forward person, was doing that. Now, ultimately, I started having joint problems. And so stopping doing that made it so I didn't have to worry about my joints for quite a while. And I'm still not really particularly worried about my joints. Oh, my gosh, there's a zoo. I'm not interested in the zoo. I'm right here. I think... I think I'm going to keep going down this road. And then I'm going to go that way. Tunnel St. Crystal Ball. Anyway, and then I'll finally make it back to wherever it is. Oh my gosh, I can't remember.
Oh, that's bad. Yeah, let's just keep going. Okay. So, the 150-year world, keep think about what you're doing, what you're trying to accomplish, what you want out of life, and go back even further and you go, well, Abraham and Methuselah lived a lot longer than we do, and it was only did anything particularly. It certainly didn't seem to be an important enough thing that they wrote about it. So anyway. There are 13 more people talking, but they're all talking in Spanish, and they probably don't understand what I'm saying, so it doesn't matter. The 150-year rule is not about... I don't think it has anything to do with not being particularly healthy. I think people are way too wrapped up in trying to be healthy. That's become the mantra of our times. I think it was bigger back in the 80s and the 90s, but I think it's still with us. I don't know if it's growing or not. But yeah. I think I like older mentalities on this. So I could be accused of being nostalgic, but I think that's too, I think I go too far back. I think nostalgia means that you really treasure and value your childhood and the way things went in your childhood, because, you know, you're kind of an idiot, you know, and you think that's what it's all about. Was don't I wish I could go back to my childhood? And I don't. I'm not interested in my childhood at all. That's okay. It wasn't the end of the world. Oh my gosh, man. I don't want to be that guy. So. Oh. I was amazed by this guy skittering down here going way too fast and how he was able to apply his brakes and not flip over. And so that was my one great biking stunt, was falling head over heels and... I was out of commission for a while. I had some pretty serious rug burns. Anyway. What else? Oh, I was talking about a little bit about like Myers-Briggs stuff, and it's like, well, duh, obviously, this and that. But the whole question is, are you supposed to? Is there anything you're supposed to do about it? Is having this great knowledge revelatory and helps you to do anything? It's like, no. I think what it begins to say is that there are a lot of different people. And that what seems to work for one person doesn't work for another one. You know, interests and things like that. The one-size-fits-all mentality of, hey, if you have this, 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 and this, you're having a good time. It's like the whole thing about, you should really love a place because of its incredible party club scene and all young people, that's what all young people want. And if you want young people, you better provide that kind entertainment for them. And it's like, golly, what? I don't like going to parties at all. I just don't like them. So I tend to avoid them. But I go when Lisa says she wants to go. And you go, okay, let's go. But she wants somebody to go with her, so that's me. And she has to, I hope I don't make it too hard to talk me into it. It's certainly not my intent. But yeah, it's like, would I do this unless you wanted me to do it? No, I wouldn't do it at all. And it's hard to tell with most people if they're just trying to keep up appearances, if they're hoping something's going to bring them more joy and happiness, or if, you know, they're just doing it because that's the expectation. And it's hard to tell. And even when you're talking to people like that, they have a hard time getting through it too. And you go, well, they're not being honest. And you go, no, people, you know, we don't get into that. We don't get weird. They're lying to themselves. And you go, why are you using those kinds of terms to say this? Just please don't. That's just rude. So you wanna oh, what's a good way to say it? I think I'm gonna need to sit for a little bit here soon. Anyway, okay. So yeah, let me tell you how I had my Myers-Briggs type done. This is long before I ever knew anything about the silly thing. I went to work for the public health office there in Tucumcari, and they were having some internal personality conflicts. And I had just joined the group, so it had nothing to do with me in particular. And some consultant was brought in for thousands of dollars, I think, to come and to do this type thing, because it was supposed to help everybody know the different styles of the different people, and
hopefully get along better, I guess.
Well, I don't think it ever really worked. But that's how I got my INFP. And over time, I've taken some of this stupid free test, which I think are just as good as the stupid paid-for, quote, professional test, which is the first one I ever had. And I really kept typing as INFP, but can I be honest? I said, once you know what you are or what you're supposed to be, I think your mind kind of wraps around that, and it's almost like self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's just kind of the way it kind of goes. So, yeah, it says, do I find it of any kind of value? And you go, sort of, but probably not. Mariposa, is that a butterfly? De la tarde. Boy, that's kind of like half butterfly, half moth almost looks like. Interesting. So anyway, so I've kind of gotten to that point on things like that. So I don't find these things terribly useful. Although, if you're bored and you don't have anything better to do, it's not a horrible thing to do, I suppose, to spend some time. Don't spend any money on it. Don't do that at all. You know, take one of the free tests if it's interesting to you. Take two or three of them, and if they tend to be kind of consistent, I guess that is your type, as if that helps anyway. They always say, oh, these are the kinds of jobs you should go for. These are the kind of people you should have relationships with. Trying to kind of turn it into kind of a life coaching sort of a thing. Because that's where the money really comes from. Not actually doing the test, but what the test tells you you should be doing. Anyway, so there's kind of another one. Now everybody says, oh, you guys would love Myers-Briggs because it's so scientific. And you go, yeah. This is, we've found that. When you're typed out, you really are the kind of person that it types. Ta-da. And you go, wow, this is amazing. And you go, so what? It doesn't tell you anything interesting or important. Uh-oh. Is this part of the park just shut down? Looks like it. Oh, at least I got a bench to sit out for a bit. Huh. Well, that happens. So I'm going to sit down. I said I was going to sit down. I need to do that. Light cycles. Moment factor, by moment factory. Huh. Maybe if I go down this way a little bit more, I'll pass this part of the park that is now dead or turned off or something. Oh. Ow. Oh. Oh. Okay. So, yeah. Myers-Briggs is kind of fun, but I think it's pointless. If you start living your life according to whatever advice you get from somebody about that, it's kind of like, okay, it's just one step off of the Chinese zodiac. I forget what I am. I think I'm a sheep. I think I'm a sheep. Oh, hey, it's opening up. No, it's not opening up. They're just letting it cluster. Oh, it's closing back up again. We're saying
Bienvenidos. It's not really Bienvenidos. It's get lost. Anyway, Chinese zodiac. I think, and it was all supposed to be based on your birth year. And because of what I was born, I'm a sheep. And let me tell you, you go to any Chinese restaurant, they'll have a little placemat that talks about the Chinese zodiac, probably. And in doing that, it'll tell you what your personality is. It's really interesting because everybody can read themselves in it just fine. You know, you go, oh, how can it do that? That is so amazing. And you're going, this is the biggest pile of horse manure that's ever been. Anyway. And it said for me, especially, says do not have a relationship with an ox. Lisa is an ox, according to this. So Lisa and I should have never gotten together. Horrible. It was a horrible mistake. 37 years later, you should have never gotten together. This is a mistake. And it's like, well, that just shows you that it's cute, it's funny. If you don't have anything else to do while you're waiting for your food to come, playing this little game with the Chinese zodiac can be fun. Anyway, and don't take it, but with a grain of salt. Same thing I ultimately do with Myers-Briggs. Because I'll look at it and I'll say, oh, yeah, you know, and I'll just be fooling around and say, at least why don't we do yours? And I think we did once. I don't remember what it was, so it's completely different from mine. And it's like, so what's the problem? I said, well, I know now what I've always known is that we are not made for each other to be alike. We are made for, we do well as a complement to each other. Lisa's got strengths that I lack, and I've got strengths that Lisa lacks. And that's good, I think. Or I've always looked at it as being good. I'm not going to change my relationship based on any of this. I'm not going to go find somebody to which I might be more compatible. It's like, oh, good night, forget that. I love Lisa Jane. She's my favorite person in the whole wide world. Did I call her this morning? I don't remember. I don't know if I have. I probably should at some point soon. Anyway, so there's one now that's kind of current that may actually be a little bit more useful, although it's less, quote, scientific, which is hilarious because the science, is science really proving anything is true? No. It's just saying that it can be replicated. That's usually what science can do, is something that can be readily replicated. And that's what the Myers-Briggs type is. It's something that by its nature can be easily replicated. So, because it isn't really a question of truth, it's a question of usefulness. Is it useful? And my basic thing is, I don't think it's really that useful. Although it may stop you from doing something incredibly dumb, like trying to become a really amazing salesman when you really don't have the personality that lends itself to success. Doesn't mean you can't make money being a salesman. Some crap sells itself. And all you have to do is just make somebody aware of it. And that doesn't take any kind of personality particularly at all. Really amazing salesmen can actually change your mind, can influence you. I think that's where we get the whole thing about influencers, like on the internet. Anyway, this thing is called, they've chopped people up into different, I don't know what they call them, personalities, something. Alpha, beta, gamma. I don't think Epsilon really became a thing. Omega, Sigma, I don't know.
Anyway, they've got all these kinds of things. And apparently it's still being worked out. A whole lot of people say, oh, we've come up with a brand new, it's called this, and it's this kind of personality type. And I kind of poked around at it. I'm definitely not an alpha. I don't care about being in charge. I have no interest in that kind of stuff. I've decided that I'm probably somewhere along the lines of a gamma or an omega for just, I don't really care what you think. You know? No, you know, I kind of care about what Lisa thinks. Beyond that, it goes downhill fast. Because, I have to be honest, I think as a child, most people dismissed me out of hand. I don't think my parents thought a lot of me. Certainly didn't understand me. That's okay. I'm not looking to be understood. And any time I try to spend any time trying to understand myself, it's just a useless waste of time, as far as I'm aware. So I don't really look at it. Except when I get really bored and I say, well, let's go look at Sigma or Omega and see if I can figure out which one's which, and I can't. Even when they say, you may be one or the other. Here's five easy ways you can figure out whether you're one or the other. And I don't think I really pay that much attention. And it's like, okay, I think this whole rating system of Greek letters can't really apply too strongly to me because I don't pay enough attention to it. I'm not willing to go and figure it out. If they had kind of a Myers-Briggs, you know, I'll ask you 50 questions and at the end I will tell you what you are. I think that would help me immensely to know if I'm an Omega or a Sigma or I don't really care. And I guess it really comes from I'm not really looking for fame or fortune. I think I did it when I was younger. I really would have liked to have been famous. But as I've gotten older and I've looked at famous people, I said, I don't want them. I don't want to have their problems. And it's just not interesting to me. Don't want it. So, there, my friends, is that. I appreciate these people here. Well, you ran down here and then she got to the sign that said Bienvenidos, voila, and just turned around and went back the way she came. Oh my gosh. Is that the ultimate answer to the question? Is that? Oh, I don't know. Anyway. A message from the Elders Quorum president about a need that somebody has to get to church and and getting ready for the discussion of Elders Quorum. And I did a calculation in my head, it's probably a bad calculation, and which is I'm going to be on an airplane, so I don't have to worry about these two things. I can't help with this need because I won't be at church anyway, and I won't be able to, and I won't participate in the discussion. So it becomes the question of, will I really take pains to make sure that I read and think about and ponder the talk that is the assignment for this coming Sunday? And I said, eh. Now, I will tell you, though, I do take the time to try to listen to modern prophets. I listened to a talk from President Hinckley. It's not very, you know, it's probably 30 or 40 years old now. It has a 30 or 40 year old mentality about it, which I like a lot more than the modern one. The modern one is all about Jesus loves you. And love, 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 smooch, 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 you know, give me this, give me that. And it really kind of, I don't know, I'm just not into it. Which is okay because there's plenty of talks that aren't that way. Mostly from the past, though. And this thing is saying something very important to me, but I can't read it. I'll walk down this road. And we'll see what happens. Light cycle. Maybe it's just something coming. Other than being an English speaker, I think I blend in pretty well with the locals, except that I'm being a lot more casual about my walking, because today I'm not trying to get somewhere. Living in here? I think people are living in here. There's a food truck. I see sounds, music, stuff like that. Interesting. Anyway, so that's part of my thing too. I think I get around to serving people more from a sense of obligation than from a deep sense of I care about you, I love you type thing. That's just kind of the way I am. Oh, yeah, you know, I don't mind taking up my time. It's not like I'm doing anything really useful in it. There's this truck and this fella pumping out water. He says there's a bunch of standing, stagnant water here on the trail. But I've gone past it. Okay, now I need to get back on the trail. Alright, so I only really got into alpha, beta, and all these other things just really lately, and I haven't gotten into it much at all. And I'm finding that, to a large extent, I really don't find it useful to me. So I tend to ignore it. I'm just Jason. Whatever that means. I'm Lisa's husband. Whatever that means to her. I want to be a good husband to her. Whatever that means to her.
2 kilometers is the zoo. You know, I've got money. I can go to the zoo. Probably not a bad thing to do, too. It's Thursday. There's certainly a lot of places to go to that, it seems to be a lot for bird watching and such. I'm not much of a birder, really. They go, so what are your hobbies, Nimro? And you go, you know what? I pursue any kind of hobby so I don't know. They go, well, you're an amateur radio operator. And you go, yeah, I am. And you go, but you don't do it. I said, hardly ever at all. You go, do you have some radios? Go, some. I don't know what kind of hobbies I'm going to pull together later. It's not really a pastime, and I guess that's what people think about other hobbies. It's more about an integration. So people say, well, you seem to write some, and you go, yeah, I have. Says, I've gotten some stuff published, and you go, that's true, I have. I don't want writing to become a chore. When you become a writer, you have to be prepared just to write all the time, whether it's interesting or not. Write. And honestly, I've never wanted to be like that. I've got a computer building. I guess it's a hobby. Hobby is, I think, anything that you do a lot, but not for money. You know, you don't do it for an occupation. And I kind of screwed the pooch by doing computers as an occupation, sort of. Although, can I be really honest, I don't pursue it like it's my occupation. If I'm anything, I'm a professional bum. And I'm not really that interested in getting good at anything particularly. Some people said, oh, you must be really good at computers. And you go, that's because you don't know me very well. Says, do I know some things about computers? Yeah. He says, you know, oh, come fix this thing for me. And you go, you know, because most of this stuff is made not to be difficult. Can I be honest? Nobody, over time, things don't get harder. They get easier so that more people can take advantage of them. More people can do them. Stuff like that. That's the move from the desktop computer or the laptop to the phone, to the smartphone, is basically a study in doing something easier. Now, it doesn't mean it's done well. In that way, you can kind of say, oh my gosh, I think I'm in trouble, you know? I'm totally amazed by it. I'm walking past buses and taxis, and there's several taxis here. and the guys will get a bottle of water out, and they will clean up their taxi. Am I supposed to be paying money for doing what I do? Horatio T. Tarifas? I'm kind of worried. It wants some money from me. Perfectly fine for all the money to go into the zoo. Really hadn't looked at going to the zoo today, but I didn't come today with anything particular at all. Anyway. Sendero Metropolitano. Don't know what that means. Anyway. And I shouldn't look it up either. Isn't that terrible? I could make this into a huge cultural adventure by looking up the names and stuff. But, not really sure I care. Now that's something I know that I've got from a very young age, is that I don't care. I'm trying to think if there's a few things I care deeply about. I care about Lisa and her life. But it really ends up being more of a devotion and a duty than anything beyond that particularly. It's a key. So here I am. Oh. Well, we'll see what this turns out to be. No particular reason to stop doing what I'm doing. Let's see. What are you talking about? Oh, about not caring. Yeah. To a large extent, I'm a person that really doesn't worry too much about these kind of things. Construction people. So maybe I'm not going anywhere. It looks like I'm not going anywhere. Yeah, okay. Only authorized vehicles. Okay. Okay. I think I've basically gone a long way to find out that different things are probably closed for the season. So there's that. Man, I thought we had spiny trees in Tucum here. I just rub up against this really intensely spiny tree here. Ugh. I'm going to sit here for a little bit. Oh my. Got anything else really to talk about? I had to talk about meandering. It's going to be a wonderful Cohen Meander recording because I'm doing what, you know, I just pick up what I always do. I just meander. Anybody who says, oh, you've got to be organized, it's like, well, I guess I'm living proof you don't have to be too organized. And maybe I am a little. Anyway, 2 hours now. I'm going to go ahead and let it go. Talk to you later. Bye.